All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Roller Out the Barrel Podcast, the vintage baseball podcast, talking to vintage baseball players, border to border, coast to coast. You just heard in our intro, My Country Tis of Thee, by the harmonic stylings of Rick Skronowski, our last guest on our last interview. If you listened to that interview, or if you didn't listen to that interview, I invite everybody listening to go back and listen to that interview. Something I wanted to talk about just before we bring in our guest is Rick Skronowski is currently suffering from cancer. And when we did the interview last month, he didn't want to talk about that, so we didn't. It doesn't come up in the interview even once. But I did want everybody that listens to this podcast to understand that I believe he's in stage four. And if you could all just send him some well wishes as he's fighting as much as somebody in his position can fight. And I don't want to talk about any more details about the cancer because I don't want to get anything wrong. So contact him, send him some well wishes, and listen to the episode. And that My Country Tis of Thee. Once I started pulling some harmonica stuff out of him, he just went with it, and that is great, and I'm going to be using that a lot. And now, getting into this week's, or months, I should say, but we're in recording season now, so this month's interview, coming to us from Cincinnati, Ohio, is Bill Diekman. Bill, how you doing?
Doing all right, man.
Bill, you're a member of the 1869 Cincinnati Red Stockings vintage baseball team. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, I'm up in Michigan, so I know this, but I don't know anything else about it. So if this is a topic matter that we need to steer away from, just tell me. But aren't there two teams? Aren't there two Cincinnati Red Stocking teams?
Yes.
Just tell everybody what the difference is.
The Reds Hall of Fame started their own team and decided to use the 1869 Red Stockings name and the same uniform as ours. We're not happy about it. We used to do a lot for the Reds and the Reds Hall of Fame promotion-wise. They decided they needed their own group to do that. Thought that it was going to be strictly a promotional group who would wear uniforms and do promos at the ballpark and the Hall of Fame. Then they decided to play baseball also using our name and our uniform.
Oh, so basically they just took what you guys did and just did it for themselves.
Yes.
So was there a struggle? Did they just want to be in control of what you guys did and you guys didn't want that?
We loved doing the things, the appearances and for the Hall of Fame and the Reds. We used to do a exhibition game at the ballpark every year before or after a Reds game. We did a lot of appearances at the Reds Hall of Fame and at the ballpark promoting the Hall of Fame primarily. But they decided that they needed to have their own group doing that. And again, I don't think they needed to. We don't think they needed to. But it was a decision they made. We asked them not to go out in the vintage baseball field wearing our uniform, actually using our reputation, jeopardizing our reputation, which we worked so hard to build. It didn't go well. Unfortunately, we've done nothing for them since. It wasn't a pleasant thing.
So when there's vintage baseball teams out there wanting to schedule with you guys, what is the wording that separates you two clubs from each other?
The wording is that they're called the Reds Hall of Fame team.
Okay.
We're called the 1869 Red Stockings. There is confusion. There was a lot of confusion early. There were teams who scheduled them thinking they were scheduling us. There was a lot of confusion early. Now I think at least all of the local teams, probably everybody within 100 miles knows there is a difference. And they do mostly call themselves the Reds Hall of Fame team, which helps to avoid the confusion.
Any chance that you two will play each other for the rights to the team?
No.
That, like a cage match. Like, no. That would be, yeah, obviously that's not going to happen, but that would be incredible.
Right. We made it very clear that, although we have nothing against players on that team, I'm sure it's a nice bunch of guys. And I have met a couple, and they are. It's the idea that they're wearing our uniform, using our name, using our reputation. We don't feel they should be out playing Vintage Baseball impersonating us. There are other they could use. The Hall of Fame likes to tell the fact that, you may want to edit this part, the Hall of Fame likes to sell as a fact that 1869 Red Stockings is the same organization as the current Reds, and they're not. It's two organizations removed. They're no more related to the 1869 Reds and your team is, other than living in the same city.
Right.
But they tell that, and they feel that because of that, they have the right to the uniform and the name, and they can do whatever they want with it.
So you're a part of the VBBA. Are they involved in anything other than just their
They're not a part of the VBBA, no. And I would hope the VBBA would not accept them, since they're using a name, a uniform that already exists.
Do they take part in like tournaments or festivals or any events like that, the bigger ones?
As far as I know, they haven't been in any of the bigger ones. I mean, I don't follow them real closely. I have not. We've announced to local clubs, our team has announced to local clubs that we don't acknowledge them as a Vintage Baseball team. And we will not play them, and we will not participate in any event in which they're invited.
So you're a big Cincinnati Reds fan. So this kind of has to tear you a little bit, right?
We all are big Reds fans. I mean, we're baseball fans, and Cincinnati's got a great baseball tradition, and we're very proud of that. Gosh, we're very proud to be 1869. Red Stockings and wear that uniform. It is, I'm sure, undoubtedly, the most famous vintage baseball team there is. Everybody knows who the 1869 Red Stockings are. And it's gotten us places and things that even other vintage baseball teams probably have not had the opportunity to do. It's been fantastic. We're really lucky to live in Cincinnati.
How do Cincinnati Reds fans in your age group feel about Pete Rose? I am interested about your answer to this.
My friends and I have Cincinnati Reds baseball fans who are friends. We love Pete Rose, love the way Pete Rose played. His accomplishments are undeniable, that they belong in the Hall of Fame, but unfortunately, especially us who are sort of purists, maybe, he knew what he was doing was wrong. He knew that the worst thing he could do is bet on baseball. I think his denial and his initial arrogance about it all, feeling like he was above the law, is what's kept him out. I think very strongly, and everybody I've talked to agrees, that if he had been, when he first got caught, if he had said, "I messed up, I'm sorry, I want to make it right, I'll do speaking engagements, I'll promote baseball, I'll do whatever it takes to make it right, and I'll stop immediately," he'd have been in the Hall of Fame long ago. He cooked his own goose.
Do you think after he's passed that something will happen with getting him into the Hall of Fame? Do you think that's one of the roadblocks, is he's been so arrogant and combative about it up until the point where he actually did admit to it? Do you think that's going to be what has to happen for something?
I think that there may be a chance after he dies. I think there's no chance while he's still alive. It's a shame, because he's one of the greatest baseball players ever. I'm one who always admired effort, grit, hard work. And man, he's the perfect example of all of that. And he belongs in the Hall of Fame. It's just his own fault that he's not in there. I'd like to see him in there, but I don't think it'll happen until after he dies. No.
Yeah, you're probably right on that. Tell me about that stadium that the Reds currently play in. How do you like that stadium?
I like it. And that's one of the good memories that we played there probably 10 or 12 times, 2003 to 2013 or 14, once a year after or before a game. We did both. But we helped open up that stadium. The first opening day in 2003, they decided to do a little ceremony like the original 1869 Red Stockings turning over the stadium to the current club. So they had a little fog thing out at the entrance and center field, and they introduced us, the 1869 Red Stockings. Now, this is 10 minutes before the game, so the stadium is filled, 40,000 people. They introduced the 1869 Red Stockings, and nine of us in uniform come running out through the fog. And we had to play a role. Our part was to look around and just be in awe over this big, beautiful stadium compared to what we saw in 1869. See, like, we just ran in from the past. Well, when you run out into the middle of the stadium, 46,000 people stand up and give you a loud ovation. You don't have to act. We were in awe. I mean, it is just an awesome thing to be recognized by that many people.
Sure.
Then we stand there for 15 or 20 seconds or whatever, and they start introducing the Reds to take the field. And as they introduce one Red, he comes out of the dugout, and one of us comes back through the fog. So we did that nine times, and then the stadium was theirs. We kind of turned it over to them. Like that was a great. And then they gave us tickets, and we sat and watched the game. It was fantastic.
So obviously, the passion for baseball is there. The passion for Cincinnati. The passion for the Reds. Just that one little hiccup that you have to live every year.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, we still like the Reds.
How is the team doing so far this year?
We have played. Our first game is this Sunday.
Okay.
We're playing the Muffins. Or Saturday, I take that back. Playing the Muffins in the Columbus. The Muffins is our favorite team to play. We normally open the season with them up and end the season with them down at our place.
Are you playing where the Muffins play their games? Is that a home game? It must be, obviously. You're in Columbus this Saturday, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they normally play at the Ohio Historical Society, but the village there at the Ohio Historical Society is closed still because of the COVID. So it's playing at an alternate site this time. But normally we play in the village.
Is that a 1 o'clock game?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe it's 1 o'clock, yeah.
I am also...
Hopefully it's going to be open by the Ohio Cup. The Ohio Cup up there is my favorite event. I think it is the best event in baseball. They've got usually about 25 teams, four fields, and it's as much a social event for me as it is a baseball event. I just love seeing all the people that I see every year. Some of them I only see once a year, but I always look forward to that.
Yeah, the Ohio Cup is, you're right, it is a social event. Not much serious baseball happens until it's time to get serious, I guess. But those times are few and far between, actually.
Yeah, the Ohio teams only get to play one day, either Saturday or Sunday. We always play Saturday. and I always stay overnight. My wife and I always stay overnight. I go back over on Sunday to spend some time and people that I didn't get to see or talk to on Saturday. Because there's so many and the day goes so fast. And sometimes the baseball gets in the way of the social life.
Yeah, the last time I was there, the rain got in the way a couple of times. Nothing that lasted a long time that would destroy the fields or anything, but there was like thunder and lightning and hiding under tents for maybe 15, 20 minutes a couple of times. But that was just as much fun anyway.
Yeah, I think there was a couple of Sundays in the last 10 years or so that were really messy. And we had beautiful days on Saturday, and I'm sorry for those guys on Sunday that had to play in the rain. That's not fun.
Your vintage baseball moniker is Pick, P-I-C. Tell me about that nickname.
Well, I was kind of a goofy little kid. We moved from one area of town to another, and we were meeting new friends, and they asked me my name. And I said, well, my name is Bill, but you can call me Pickle because I like eating dill pickles. Dumb thing to say, but I was 10 or 12 years old. And it stuck. My brother made it Pick. And he shortened it to Pick because one syllable is easier to say than two. And I kind of liked it because it's sort of distinctive. And it's not really derogatory. So when we started playing vintage baseball, they said, you need a nickname. And I said, well, I've already got one. It's not really a baseball nickname, but all of my close friends call me Pick. Still do. All of my golf buddies call me Pick, and the baseball guys call me Pick. I'll bet there's probably a lot of guys out there in vintage baseball who know Pick, but don't know who Bill Diekman is. I just stuck with it. I've met, I think, two other guys in my life who had the nickname of Pick. So if somebody yells, hey, Pick, I pretty much know they're talking to me.
On the Frankenmuth, I ran a team from Frankenmuth, and we had a player on there, and his name was Pickles because his last name was Gherkin. So I loved calling him Pickles.
That's good.
We started on a different team together, and he was, I believe his nickname was the Constable or something like that, but I always called him Pickles because I just thought it fit with, because I love those sweet little pickles. Anyway,
so my brother had a good sense for two, and he used to tell some of the younger nieces and nephews that they called me Pick, which was short for pickle, because when I was younger, I was green. I had little bumps all over my body. And he went on to tell them, doctors got it under control. I had to take these little green pills. And if I didn't take them, I would turn green again. He used to, and nieces and nephews, when they were really young, used to worry about me. asked me if I took my green pills. And we had a lot of fun with
the pickle pills.
Yeah.
Okay, Bill, we're going to go all the way back now. We're going to go all the way back. We're going to talk about baseball over the span of your entire life, and we're going to start back at your earliest memories of baseball.
I started playing Knothole, that's the local Cincinnati name for youth baseball, Knothole baseball at age 7. Back then, there was no T-ball. There was no coach's pitch. You played baseball. You didn't play at all. There was no rules, modifications. It was regular baseball, even though we were 7 years old. I played mostly second base or shortstop. I was decent field, no stick. I played until I was, I think, about 15 when they started throwing curveballs. When they started, that curveball started at my head and curved over the plate, I was done. I gave it up about then. And then when I was, I think, 19 or 20, I lived in St. Bernard, a little community within Cincinnati, and had a real good recreational program. I started playing softball. I played mostly outfield and a little shortstop then. And moved eventually. My company decided to sponsor a team, so I managed that team for 40 years.
Whoa.
Mostly softball. I retired after my 60th year. On my 61st birthday, I said, that's enough. And focused on vintage baseball for about 10 years, and I played both. Not often did I get to not overrun first in vintage ball, but a couple of times in softball, I stopped at first. Guys looked at me, what's the matter with you? There'd be days I'd have a Friday night softball game and a Saturday baseball game, and Sunday golf and Monday bowling. Those were great weekends back before my kids were home and I got involved in their activities. Those were great weekends. And let's see.
Everybody's best memories are from before their kids are born.
Yeah. Well, for when they were young, fortunately, there were a lot of guys on our softball team who had kids about the same age, got married about the same time. And it was a family event. The place where we played had a playground. It was kid-friendly. The wives would come, the kids would come, the kids would play. We would play softball. The ladies would sit and watch us play. It was great. It was a family event. And bowling was the same way when our kids were young. Everybody would bring their kids, and the kids would play, and the wives would socialize, and we would bowl. It was a family event, and that's really how I got started with vintage baseball. The first weekend was the best family weekend of my life, I think. That's another story. I don't know if now's the time to tell or not.
But do it. Now's the time. Okay. Tell me about the first weekend you had as a vintage baseball player.
It was 1997. My brother, Al, a little bit of background, he's 4 years older than me, he was, and he was a huge baseball fan from the time he was a little kid. I mean, huge. He loved the game, and he would read and research anything he could find about baseball. Back before the internet, anything he could find, he'd go to the library and just try to find what he could find about baseball. He relocated to New York. He was 20, I guess. And I think it was either 96 or mid-97, he called me one day. We saw each other about once a year, but we'd talk on the phone a lot. We had a great relationship. He called me one day, and he was so excited. I never heard him so excited. He said, "Pick, you're not going to believe this." He said, "Somebody took me to this old historic village out on Long Island called Old Bethpage, and there's these guys playing 1860s baseball." He said, "It was amazing." He said, "I got to talking to one of the guys." and they suited me up and put me in the game. He said, this is fantastic. He said, it was so much fun, and these guys were so much fun. They're a great bunch of guys. He said, I thought I was in habit. Said, this is perfect. So he got involved with them, and he shared a lot of his knowledge with them, and he became pretty well-known up there on the East Coast. So anyway, he called me, and I think it was like August of that year. He said, we have started the Atlantic. It's probably the second best known vintage baseball club there is. They're the first ones to beat the 1869 Red Stockings in 1870 after about 57 straight in 69 and I think 81 straight games. The Atlantics were the first one. Anyway, he and a friend that he met through vintage baseball started the Atlantics, and they had committed to come down to Toledo, Pennsylvania for the Sylvania Cup. And all of a sudden, half of their team had five guys. So he called me and my son, who at the time was 17 years old. He called a friend of his from high school, and his son, who at the time was, I think, 20. And then I had a niece who was a guy who played baseball. We contacted him. So my family went up to Sylvania and met them. He brought his wife, his daughter, and his son played. My son who played, and my daughter, who's about the same age. The kids are about the same age. We all went up there. We went Friday night. We played a practice game because we had never played vintage baseball before. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday we played the tournament, and we won the tournament. Wasn't expecting that. And then there was a big party Saturday night, and we went over to Cedar Point on Sunday and Monday. And it was just the thrill of playing this game, which is fun, great fun. They were playing the bound game, wearing uniform that's authentic. I was never a big history fan, but I was just overwhelmed. Here I am actually living history. This is the same game they played by at least similar rules, wearing a uniform that looked like them. Great fun game, great people. Man, somebody make a good play. Both teams are applauding. The teams are all friendly. They socialize afterwards. We had the best family weekend I can ever remember. It was just fantastic. My son was still playing baseball, and I was coaching his team. So there was a local team here called the Sharonville Shamrock who played out at Heritage Village where we played. And leader of that team was Greg Roots, who's the Red historian, still is. Al had known him through Sabre. They were both members of Sabre. So Al started working on him saying, hey, you got to start the Red Stockings in Cincinnati. You got to have the Red Stockings finish baseball team. And but they still had the Shamrocks at that time. And I said, if you do that, I want to be involved. But my son's got another year to play. So went and watched them play a couple of times, loved it, wanted to play. In 98, the next year, we had to go back and defend our title. So we had a great time. We up in that year. I was sucked by then. They decided in Old Bethpage to have a festival at 98. I think they're still having it. I was the first one. So me and my wife drove up there. The kids were grown and they had their own things going on. We drove up there. I played 6 or 7 games days just as a sub. There was guys that teams that were short. They suited me up and I played at least 6 games over 2 days. That drive home was long and I was cramping up the whole way. But I was hooked by then. And Greg said, okay, we'll start the Red Stockings. And by then, my son was out of baseball. We started the club in 2000. And it's just been a great ride ever since. When we started in 2000, there were, I think, 3 or 4 clubs within 100 miles of Cincinnati. Not many to play. So The second year we started in 2001, we started the Buckeyes. So we're kind of unique. We're actually called the Cincinnati Vintage Baseball Club. We have two teams, the Red Stockings and the Buckeyes. Both have their distinct identities and reputations. We are one club. We have the same home field. I was president of the club from 2001 till last November. I finally stepped down. But younger guys run the club. But we've had a great ride ever since. Now there is, I think, 17 or 18 teams within 100 miles of Cincinnati. So we got plenty of teams to play. When we first started, we pretty much had to travel because there weren't so many around here. So we did a lot of traveling the first few years. We don't do as much anymore because we try to schedule as many of the local teams as we can. Can't do home and home with all of them because we just don't play that many games.
Uh-huh.
That was probably more than you asked for. Sorry.
Well, yeah. How many teams are within 100 miles of you right now?
It's 17 or 18. I just told recently there's another one that started up, but plenty. And of course, you want to play as many of them as you can. Can't do home and home with every one of them, and still do. There's a few events we always do, the Ohio Cup, and we've got a couple of paid events that we do, and we play the Buckeyes three or four times a year. When a team comes in from out of town, we each play them a game, so they get to play two games against two different teams.
Tell me about the home. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
We've got a great venue at Heritage Village. It is one of the best places in vintage baseball to play. I'm sure you've been to Greenfield Village. That is a great place.
Yeah.
There's Genesee Country in Rochester, Mumford, New York. Old Bethpage, of course, Muffin Meadow, Lafayette Square in St. Louis. But I'd rank ours right up there with any of them. It's in a historical village. There's 14 buildings there. Right field line, there's a shaded spectator area. The left field line is a fence in one of the buildings. And outfield is all trees. It's a beautiful place.
What would you say, other than your home field, obviously, is your favorite place to play?
I think Muffin Meadow. It's quirky. I like to say it has a lot of character. There's a apple tree just beyond shortstop. Right field is very short. It's got a slope out in right field. Left field is really short for the big hitters. But I just love playing. And maybe partly because it's the Buff, and that's just such a great organization, a great bunch of guys. I really like playing there. I enjoy Greenfield Village and Old Bethpage, but ours and Buff.
How did when you back were first hearing about vintage baseball and seeing vintage baseball and playing it a little bit before you got involved a couple of years later? What did you think the first time they told you had to catch it with your bare hand?
Well, it's kind of funny. When I was young, it wasn't my first. When I was young, we lived in a very poor neighborhood. And in the summertime, we didn't have internet and we didn't have TVs. And we would be outside all day, every day, and we would play baseball. And like I said, it wasn't a well-to-do neighborhood, and a lot of the guys didn't have gloves. So when we would play, those of us that played a lot of baseball would let the guys that didn't use our gloves, and we would play barehanded. So it really wasn't new to me.
Oh. It's the first time I've heard of that.
Yeah. We also would, those of us that played baseball regularly, to even things out, we would bat off. Again, just to even out. And And that's kind of the thing I liken that to vintage baseball, in that we didn't play on a field, we just on a baseball field, we just had a big grassy area. And there were some trees. And you want to play the game bad enough, you make it work. If you don't have enough guys, you play right field and out. You play it off of the trees. You work around the perks. And there's a lot of vintage baseball fields that are that way. Up in Eagle Grove, where the Squires play, that field is in a forest. I mean, there's I don't know how many. There's six or eight trees in play. It's a new experience. And there's one of the other beauties of vintage baseball. Every field is different. Some of the ways they play are different, the rules they use, but every field is different. It's all a new adventure, but it's always great.
Hey, Bill, you're a member of the VBBA. They just had their annual conference this last weekend. Tell everybody what your participation is in the VBBA, and tell us about the, I guess, the point of the conferences. What are you guys trying to accomplish with these conferences?
Well, two things that I see. Number one is education. There are always little seminars, sessions going on Saturday morning, hopefully to educate us more about what might be about how to form a club. It might be about how to raise money. It might be about rules. It might be about history. It might be about period clothing, period food, if you're having food afterwards, all kinds of different things, informational sessions that should help a vintage team become a better vintage team and enjoy the game more. The other thing is socializing. That's a big part of this game, and I think most people who love the vintage game will agree that the people having this common bond of loving baseball and the vintage baseball is pretty special. I love the social aspect of it. Again, like the Ohio Cup, seeing friends from us from the East Coast, from Minnesota, that you're just not going to see very often. You get to see them at least once a year at the conference. The last two have been virtual because of the COVID. But I love the things. They're just great fun. And I always learn something every time I go. And networking, of course, is good too.
And what's that website for the VBBA?
It's vbba.org.
Okay, so if you're currently in a club that's not associated with the VBBA, I recommend you look them up, see what it's all about. Got any questions? You can contact Bill. He knows it all. You know all the questions, right, Bill? There's not a question that you don't know the answer to.
Questions and answers, but I have a few. I've also been involved for, I don't know, 10 years or so with the Rules and Customs Committee. We've put together a lot of really good information that is on the website. That some people think of us as we want to be the vintage baseball police and tell everybody you're doing it wrong, you've got to fix it. That's not what we're about. What we're about is making the information available. And we're not telling people you got to play this way or you got to play that way. We just want them to know what the documentation shows, what really was, how the game was played, what the rules really were, how they were interpreted, so that if you got an interested spectator or if you're being interviewed by media, you should be giving them good information. It's again, we're not telling you you got to do this on the field, you can't do this, and just we think everybody should have at least one well-informed person on their club. And if someone asked a question, especially media, it should all be referred to the person who knows so they can get good information.
Yeah, if you don't have one well-informed person on your club, you will spider web off into other rules that didn't really exist, and you're interpreting things the wrong way, and then it's just an accordion effect, a domino effect, if you will, from there. And then you show up to play a team that's very knowledgeable, and they're like, "What are you doing?" Go ahead.
It's embarrassing to us. It's not good for Vintage Baseball in general. And I think that you know, regardless of how you play, knowing and spreading good information is important. You have an obligation to those that it is important to and that try to play as authentically as possible. And many of us play in a historic village or a living history museum. You have an obligation to them to be accurate.
Yes.
And when you put on form, you really should try to live the part. And that's part of the beauty of it. You get to live history. Man, it's awesome. It's awesome.
Well, I definitely agree with you, and everybody that's listening to this, I'm sure, agrees with you. Boy, I could talk about baseball with you for hours and hours. But we're going to get into some other things about you that don't have anything to do with baseball. You used to be quite the golfer, you say, in your youth. Can you give me some golf stories of Bill Diekman out on the course?
I didn't start until I was, I think I was over 20 before I started. And a couple of my friends took up the game, and my boss was playing the game. And both were saying, well, let's go play. And so wound up, we kind of hooked up. And my boss and some of his friends and my friends and other friends of theirs got together, and this golf group of 12 to 16 guys. And like Vintage Baseball, the camaraderie of golf and the beauty of the game, the kind of an honor system game, and you can find out who a person is golf course, watching them play, how they react to their bad shots, how they treat other golfers, and that you can learn a lot about a person on the golf course. But anyway, I fell in love with that game, and I didn't have kids at that time. I was playing a couple of times a week and got fairly decent. I was no scratch golfer. But I got my handicap down to a point, which is a lot better than average. Thought I was pretty good. The guy took me up to the Memorial Tournament. I went up to the Memorial Tournament up in Columbus and saw the pros play and realized that even though I was a fairly good golfer, thought I was very good, the game that those guys play is altogether different from what I was playing. They hit that ball so far, and their touch, their putting, their chipping, just unbelievable, unbelievable. You watch golf on TV, and it looks so easy. It is not easy. That's the hardest game.
Yes, it is not easy.
It's great. I love it. We took our first golf trip in 76. We took a few years off. From 81 through 2018, we took a golf trip every year for 5 days. Most of them down to a little place in North Carolina that was just a great place. It was a semi-private club. They had lodges there and food. Once you got there, unless you run out of beer, you didn't have to move the car the whole time. Everything was right there within walking distance. Good golf, good food, good company, just golf all day, eat, play cards at night. It's fantastic. Missed that. I really missed that. I play a lot less. I took up Vintage Baseball. Games were on Sunday. So I gave up the golf play occasionally now. I play it when I do, but I don't play well.
Oh, well, it's not always about playing well.
No, that's why they have handicaps.
And that's why they have lakes to throw your clubs into. Yeah. When you were back doing the bowling, you brought up earlier how your favorite times are in social settings with other like-minded people having fun. And you brought up bowling. Was bowling back then more of a drinking social thing and you didn't really worry about the bowling? Were you involved in leagues and stuff like that?
Yes, I was involved in leagues, and yes, it is. That's one of the beauties of it, that it's bowling and it's socializing, and yes, there's drinking. You can cuss, but like golf, you know, you can play golf, you can cuss, you can smoke, you can drink. And bowling is the same way. Now, we didn't do a lot of drinking during the family years. When I was younger, before I was married, I bowled on Friday night. And, we used to have beer frames, and we'd all walk out of there loaded. Luckily, we didn't wreck our cars and kill people. It was back in the late 60s, early 70s. I was dangerous.
Oh.
But social, where you can combine sports and social activities, it just doesn't get much better than that. And that's one of the beauties of baseball. When we would take road trips, my wife always went. And when they were younger, our kids went. And we went to places and we saw things we would never have if it had not been for vintage baseball. When we go to Boston, we'd make a week vacation out of it. We'd go to Minnesota. We'd make a week vacation out of it. New York. We've been all over the place and always would add a few days and vacation a little bit. Great.
So, well, yeah, that's one of my favorite things about vintage baseball is getting to the travel part and getting to go to these places. I don't know if I'd normally go, without the vintage baseball. So...
yeah,
that's definitely a great thing about it. I want to get into some other things before we run out of time, but I definitely want to get into your coaching. And was it your sons that you coached in baseball?
I coached my son from ball age 5, I think, up through age 17. When I first started, I didn't know what I was doing. And I guess a lot of the other guys did. I told the organization just while other guys were out recruiting, trying to find out who these guys had brothers or sisters or parents who had thrown a ball with them before and pitched to them before. I wound up with mainly all kids who had parents, the usual mothers, who had never had a baseball glove on before. So I was starting literally scratch these kids. And again, like vintage baseball, you tell a kid who's never played the game before, this is first, second, and third base. Now you go play second base. What do? They go out and stand on the base. Which I'm sure that happened in 1840s when a guy played the game for the first time. But anyway, the satisfaction that you get from taking a kid who was never introduced to the game and teaching them how to field a ground ball and throw somebody out at first, the first time that happened brought tears to my eyes when this kid, I still can picture it vividly, this kid who was had a single mother and never knew anything about baseball. The first time this kid picked up a ground ball at second and threw somebody out at first, I cried. Still get a little emotional thinking about it. To have a positive influence on a kid, that is a big, big deal. And baseball is a good team sport. the satisfaction of teaching these kids, and now I'm teaching my grandson's team. He's 14, been playing since he was 5. To see the development, the growth, know that you had something to do with it. Gosh, it's the greatest feeling in the world. Maybe better than playing.
You coached your son for an awful long time. Did you drive him crazy?
Actually, I don't know if you've got kids, but he wasn't sure he liked it. Because, you know, you expect a little more from your own than you do the others. They probably are harder on them. Probably give them as much attention because you're giving it to them else. I mean, you've already taught them how to be with them all the time at home. They ignore them more, you know, than. And it can be tough on a coach's son for that reason. They when they mess up, they hear more about it. When they need personal instruction, they don't feel like they get as much on the ball field as everybody else does. But I wouldn't change it for nothing.
So, yeah, I coached my sons for just a year. And he would not listen to me because I was dad. I was not somebody trying to teach him baseball. So I had to do this trick where I would tell other people, listen, go tell Ashton that he might want to consider doing this differently or that differently or whatever. And he would listen to them, but the same words coming out of my mouth never mattered. So actually, I had to coach my son through intermediaries during the entire experience.
I can relate to that. I very much so. I also was kind of lucky with both my son and my grandson that they were blessed with more natural ability than I had. I'm a guy of, at best, I think every ability, but I try harder than most, and I'm very proud of that. But these guys, my son and my grandson, both, they watch major leaguers and they pick up their mannerisms. It was easy coaching them.
Tell me about your fandom of college basketball. Some people might not know this about you, but your favorite sporting event is not baseball in college or professional sports. It's the NCAA basketball tournament. Tell everybody about your fandom of that.
Yeah, I really like the college basketball. It's probably the only sport that I may sit and watch a game that doesn't have my team playing. I'm a big UC fan, Cincinnati, and I'm a Xavier fan, which is rare in Cincinnati, one or the other. And it's a kind of a bitter rivalry. But I really like college basketball. These guys are fantastic athletes. And when the NCAA tournament on the Thursday and Friday, games are on from noon to midnight. Since I retired, I will try to sit in front of the TV from noon to midnight, except for bathroom and food breaks. That's how much I like it. And I try to watch as many games as I can that entire tournament, even if my team's in.
If the University of Cincinnati plays against Xavier, who are you rooting for to win?
And it's Cincinnati.
Okay. That's your favorite team.
Yeah. I'm a fan of both. But it'll always be Cincinnati when they're playing against each other.
Okay. I think we did it, Bill. I think we did it. Woo! I did want to, before I give you the old pepper, I'm going to give you the old pepper, but talk about how you sit there while your wife watches Days of Our Lives and you take in some of that storyline while you're falling asleep.
Well, that's nap time. We do together during the day. She watches Days of Our Lives and I'm sure I pick up some of the but we can discuss now and then. We can discuss.
How many years? How many years have you been falling asleep to Days of Our Lives?
Well, let's see. I've been retired for 8 years, so probably about eight. Been a while.
Oh, I don't know anything about the last 8 years. I'm back in the Hope and Bo Brady years. That's a long time ago, and also with Patch and John Black. So this is when I'm in high school. So we're talking 30 years ago. 30 years ago is when I was watching Days of Our Lives.
Wow.
That's
I know, but Patch and John are still very active in the show.
Patch is still on Days of Our Lives?
Yeah.
I got to look that up. I have to make a note of that. That's incredible. Okay, right now.
And right up within a half an hour.
Well, that's true. That's true. I'm going to give you the old pepper, Bill. So what that is you're going to hear some music, and I'm going to just start asking you questions. And these are very simple questions that you are going to give very quick answers to, like one or two word answers to, this first thing that comes to your mind.
I didn't know they were asked. I hope there's.
This is going to be completely painless, I promise you. Here we go. Bill, what is your favorite pie?
Pumpkin.
What is the last movie you saw?
Oh, I don't do good with movies. I usually fall asleep. Golly. Maybe E.T.?
Wow. Do you prefer baths or showers?
Showers.
Have you ever built a house of cards?
Yes.
What is your favorite condiment?
Salt. Put it on everything.
Name something you are afraid of.
Afraid of? Dropping a pop-up.
Do you believe in aliens?
No.
Do you prefer white or brown rice?
White.
What's the one place you haven't traveled to that you would like to?
Hawaii.
Who is your favorite superhero?
Superman.
What finger have you hurt the most in vintage baseball?
Oh, gosh. I've broken or dislocated of eight. Probably my pinky. They're both disfigured.
Have you ever milked a cow?
No.
What is your favorite nursery rhyme?
Oh, golly, yeah. Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard to get her poor dog home.
What is your favorite alcoholic drink?
Beer.
What is your favorite brand of beer?
Bud Light.
Good answer. I deliver Bud
Light. I get a lot of flack from these beer snobs who call it water, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Now I want to finish off giving you a little pepper. I want you to give me your Mount Rushmore of Cincinnati Reds players in their history. Your top four Cincinnati Reds players.
Can be more than one?
No, you four. It's a Mount Rushmore. Give me the four best Reds players ever, according to you.
Four. Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, Davey Concepcion.
Hard to argue with those.
The whole 75, 76 Red machine.
Yeah.
They were.
Absolutely. Bill, thanks for being on the show. We've done it. We've come to the end. See, I told you it'd be easy. You did great.
Thanks for having me. I hope it's not too boring.
This is what people want to hear. This is what my audience wants to hear. So what's boring to some is not to others. So,
okay.
Everybody wanted to hear
your baseball talk and takes on vintage and other things, and you covered that. I think we went 40 minutes strong on baseball, so we didn't get a lot into other things, but baseball is the name of the game here on this podcast. So,
boring person. I am honored to be on your show. Thank you for thinking of.
Yeah, absolutely. Stay on the line for me, so I can say goodbye to you properly as I say goodbye to everybody out there in baseball land. We'll be coming out with new episodes now as baseball season has started. Next week, I'm actually in Columbus, Ohio, playing with the Columbus Capitals against a newly formed club. The name escapes me right now. I don't want to say it wrong, and I'm not embarrassed to say that. Pluggies, something like that. So I'll say it right next week as I interview some people live for the first time since the pandemic started. I'm excited. Everyone be good out there and be good to each other.